Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique Gvome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to be talking to Dr. Anna Yusim, who is a board-certified psychiatrist. And I know a lot of us are dealing with COVID, and there's a lot of thoughts around fear, helplessness, and probably just uncertainty about what's going to happen in the future. And I thought Dr. Yusim could really take us through some of her approaches, because she's a holistic practitioner as well and has specialty training in psychiatry. So I can't think of anyone better than you, Anna, to talk to right now to help us think about how we can cope and how we can think about this period of time and get us through this space so that we can get into the next space, really the proverbial putting one foot in front of the other. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Raja. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And, you know, you're in a unique position because not only are you a psychiatrist, not only are you probably dealing with a lot of folks that are going to have a lot of questions for you, but you're in New York. You're right in the middle of a lot of what's going on right now with COVID. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience? And I know your experience has been actually quite personal.
Yes. So I'll talk about it from a both personal and professional standpoint, because both my husband and I got COVID, and thank God we're both on the other side of it. And, you know, everyone's like, where did you get it? We have no idea where we got it. We might have gotten it at this Purim party that we went to. Purim is a Jewish holiday, and it was on the 9th of March. And we went at our temple, and unfortunately, it wasn't canceled. Many other temples had canceled it. But then the next day, my husband came down with symptoms, and a few days later, I came down with symptoms. But it could have not been that at all. It could have been just walking down the street. It could have been riding the subway. That's really the question. Everybody knows that this is a very contagious virus, but they're not really doing tracking. It's really difficult to know who got what from whom. So there's no blame here. We certainly got the virus, and thank God we overcame it. And my husband even had to go to the hospital to get some oxygen. And it was very, very scary for him, for myself, because we don't know the direction that something like this can go. And, you know, later on, they said to him, had you come later, you wouldn't have even been admitted. You were only admitted because you came right at the beginning of everything. And so in a way, we feel so lucky that my husband was able to get the care he needed, get out before all of the craziness went down, because now they actually discharged him early. They discharged him probably 2 or 3 days before they would have discharged him. He still had fever spikes, but they're like, you know what? The hospital capacity, we need this bed. We need you home. You're not sick enough to be here.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, thank God. Thank God he's okay. Thank God he's going to get better. We took him home. But it just shows, you know, the extent of how many people needed bed capacity and how many people were getting sick. And we had a number of friends who actually had what my husband was presenting with, which was shortness of breath. And they weren't admitted. They were told, you're not sick enough. Go home. And when my husband was in the hospital, he got some oxygen. That helped a lot. I think that probably helped with his healing, along with some antibiotics, and he got hydroxychloroquine. But right now, with the level of the capacity that the hospitals are experiencing, it's just, you have to be very, very sick to even get a bed. So thank God we're on the other side of it. Now, at the same time that this was going on in my personal life, in my professional life, I'm a psychiatrist. So I also had come down with COVID. Mine was much, much less severe than my husband. So I kept working through it, but I was just feeling more tired, just more tired every day. I had to kind of push through much more.
So you didn't have the fevers, Anna? That
I did have fever spikes, but my fever spikes, it was just, I would have fever spikes and night sweats, but during the day, I felt fine enough to work. And you don't have a fever all day long. So it's like these spikes that you have, and the spikes would come. Okay. So if I had to take a Tylenol, I would take a Tylenol. And usually I would just work through it and it would go away. And eventually it, you know, just went away. But even when I was most sick, that's when my patients were starting to get most anxious. And I was having people I hadn't spoken with for a while call me, I need an emergency appointment. Everyone needed an emergency appointment because everybody was going through an emergency. Yeah. So I was working overtime then while my husband's in the hospital, I'm sick. So it was just such a crazy time. So now, you know, I'm well, thank God. And the craziness here in New York City is continuing with my poor patients, many of whom themselves are on the front lines and are also first responders. So what are these people experiencing? This is my doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers, also EMTs and police officers. They, you know, for the healthcare workers, there's a lack of personal protective equipment. So they're going to see COVID patients because almost every hospital now is a COVID hospital. There's COVID patients in almost every hospital. And they're going to see these patients without the proper mask, without proper gowns. They often have to rewear their masks for multiple shifts, which is not how the masks are meant to be designed.
Right.
The masks are meant to be designed to go into a room with one patient, do your assessment, leave, and throw the mask out. Not even meant to be worn all day.
So Anna, let me ask you then, you know, in terms of, because I really want to delve into that, but I think one of the questions a lot of people have, and I still hear some folks talk about this, you know, how is this different from the flu? And the bigger question is there's so many people that are untested. So we know that the mortality rate of COVID is probably lower than what's reported. But that being said, a lot of people tell us this is definitely different from the flu. And can you kind of take us through how did you know or think that, hey, this might be COVID, not just the flu?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, it could have been the flu. I didn't get that sick. It was for my husband
right.
who got so, so sick that we're like, this has to be COVID. And it was when he was having trouble breathing, you know, and
scary.
Yeah, so scary. 25 to 50% of people with this infection will be asymptomatic. And so a whole bunch of people will be COVID positive and not have any symptoms whatsoever, meaning that they can spread it. But for them, it's not really as much of a risk relative to the flu. I think really, you know, for the people who get hit hard, they will describe it as being hit hard, more hard or harder than any other illness they've ever had. And that's certainly how my husband felt and certainly how a few other people who have had COVID have felt. And that's if you get hit hard. A number of public figures have been speaking about it. Chris Cuomo has been speaking about it, and he got hit pretty hard, but he's been fighting it. And that's what you have to do. You have to fight this thing because it is so sinister and so powerful in many ways. You can't give it that power. You have to overpower it.
Yeah, it's very hidden, its power, because you think, oh, so many people are asymptomatic. And what were the range of emotions that you went through? And I just want to explore that because you were a practitioner, you're seeing patients, and your husband's in the hospital. And maybe it was before the big push, but, you know, he's going on oxygen. I mean, what were the range of emotions that you were fighting with? Also, the fact that you have medical knowledge, I mean, was that a good thing or a bad thing in this scenario?
Well, for me, I mean, obviously there's like terror and dread as this is happening. I'm like, what is happening? How is this happening? I'm also a very spiritual person. And so for me, obviously I wanted to, because when before even my husband got to the hospital, we put him on medication. It was obvious that his condition was more serious. So we got him some hydroxychloroquine. And then in the hospital, they started him on an antibiotic in addition to that. And so we were doing everything medically that we knew how to do, including getting him hospitalized, getting him oxygen. But the spiritual part was that I called every single spiritual person I knew, and that included energy workers and a ton of rabbis and priests and shaman from all over the world. And I said, my husband's in the hospital, and this is right when this is happening in New York City. I need you to pray for him. So everybody started praying, and 2 days later, he was discharged for a total hospital stay of like 6 days. So, and I think that that definitely helped. But yeah, it's terrifying because you don't know the direction that this could go. It could be less severe, it could be more severe. But I really feel that the prayers of all the people who were there and who, you know, probably we had thousands of people praying for my husband. And this is in addition to all the people who are his family members who love him, who would naturally be praying for him, but tons of other people. So I think that that also helped the course of things. Though, of course, there's no scientific evidence and no proof for anything like this ever.
This is unprecedented. I mean, what we're seeing here. Now, what are the workers that you're dealing with, the folks that you're seeing as patients, how are they coping? And what are the questions that they're asking you?
Yeah, so I'll tell you one of the craziest questions. This came actually from a friend of mine who went to medical school with me. She and her husband are both doctors on the front line right now, and they have 3 children. And they just don't know what the future holds. And they also have insufficient PPE and things are crazy where they're at. And so she said to me the other day, if both my husband and I pass away from this, would you care for our children?
Oh my.
And of course we would care for their children, but to even have to ask that question, to even have such, you know, something like this that you're thinking about. And this just shows it's like COVID is dangerous. People fear COVID, but people fear so much more the effect that it could have on their families, on their lives, on their loved ones. So, yeah, and this is, she's not alone in thinking that because I have a number of other patients who've told me this too. Other things that patients worry about are, we don't really understand what this disease is or how to treat it. You know,
that is the big terrifying thing is we're still trying to grapple with what do we do? We're letting the human body do it, right? We're hoping the human body will hang in there and then get through it.
Exactly. Right. And there's so many different theories. Like people say, when you get to the stage where you have trouble breathing, is that a viral pneumonia? Or is that, you know, people are saying that it's high altitude pulmonary edema as another theory, or that it's actually like really having to do with clots or like a thrombocytic endothelial issue, you know, which is big words for really, it affects your blood vessels and it creates clots. And there's a number of other theories, you know, they all could work together in some ways, but people don't really understand. And we don't have the drugs to treat it yet. Does hydroxychloroquine work? Does it not work? Is it dangerous for the heart? Then on top of that, patients are feeling actually, you know, they don't feel safe. They feel in many ways betrayed by the government, by hospital administrators. And no one's trying to betray anybody, of course, but nevertheless, people feel that because they're being put in unsafe spaces and unsafe conditions. And they're like, we didn't sign up for this. We didn't sign up for a suicide mission. And then there's just the general fear, anxiety, pandemonium of how long will this last? And do we have the capacity to get through it?
Well, Anna, there are so many negative emotions that flow through. And I thought maybe what you could help us with today is just taking us through how do we find the positive and what are some ways that we can try to hold on to a bit of hope and reground ourselves. So can you give us some of the approaches that you've been talking about or maybe that you used yourself?
Absolutely. And I think that that's really the most important question because throughout history, every generation has faced crazy things happening, whether it be wars or pandemics or financial crises or natural disasters. These things happen in the world and we have to, as a society and as a community, be able to overcome. You know, other things that have happened were genocides. You know, I worked in Rwanda after the genocide and was just amazed at the capacity of the human spirit to overcome some of the greatest atrocities that human beings can inflict upon one another. So that's really what this is about. It's finding your strength within, no matter what the external condition is. And how do you do that? I think there's a number of steps to it. And the first one is learning how to find your inner center. So centering yourself, and that's being present with yourself, being present with what is, not giving into the fear, not giving into the anxiety, recognizing that's all there and that's real. But despite all that, there's a place within your inner world that if you can access that, there is a stillness and a quiet there. And that's within your own heart, being able to connect to your heart and to be able to breathe in and out of your heart. And that's actually an exercise that you can do, breathing inside your heart and then breathing out from your heart. And you imagine your heart, as you breathe in, the heart gets bigger. And as you breathe out, your heart constricts or contracts. And then you breathe in and out of your heart 10 times. And it's really helpful that as you're doing this, you also picture somebody who you love in your heart, whether it be a child, an animal, a significant other, a family member, a friend, someone who you love, and you breathe in and out of your heart 10 times. And you do it slowly and you do it with mindfulness. And whenever you find yourself stricken with fear, to take yourself back to that space within you. It's so important to have that space. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in addition to having your own space inside, it's important to have support from the outside. So that is speaking to the people who you love and not just speaking about the catastrophe or how horrible this is, because of course, everybody's feeling that. And you don't want to too much be speaking to people who are going to instill too much fear in you over and over and over, even though that might be a natural consequence just of what's going on. But to also be able to speak to people who give you some source of peace and help you to feel loved. And that social support at times like this is so important. Because another thing that so many people are struggling with now, especially in this time of quarantine, is loneliness. And so the social support will help ground you even further. And the third part is meaning making. So how do you make meaning of this? How do you like fit this whole crazy pandemic into the grand scheme of your life? How do you use this pandemic to help you elevate your consciousness, to become a better person, to find more love within your soul, to find more ways to care, to find more things in your life for which you're grateful. No matter how you're affected by this, you have to find the silver lining. You have to find the way to see this from an optimistic standpoint or to see the good in it. There's always something good. Even with everything bad, it's almost like you have to force yourself to find that, because in that capacity to see the good, that's very healing.
And Anna, I mean, is there a time where you're ready to look at that, or can anyone be ready to start looking at the good? Because, you know, some people have lost family members or they've lost friends. And actually, in your case, Anna, you lost a dear friend of yours. So I want to know how you, if you don't mind just telling us a little bit about that person, but then how did you kind of move forward?
Absolutely, yes. And the person who Raj is speaking about is a doctor, an emergency room physician, Dr. Frank Gabrin. And he was the first emergency room physician to die of COVID in the United States. He had some underlying conditions. He was a two-time cancer survivor and had some acute pancreatitis. And he was working on the front lines. He had to rewear, unfortunately, his mask for the last four shifts. He was already coming down with COVID and it didn't seem like it was so bad. But then one day, maybe 4 or 5 days into his COVID journey, he started feeling shortness of breath. And by the time the paramedics arrived, he had already passed away. And it's terrifying how quickly that could happen. I think that the rate at which this happened was so quick because of the underlying conditions, but it just shows you this disease takes no prisoners. It's very, very scary. Frank was not an ordinary person. He was actually an amazing, amazing man, and a man who wrote numerous books about physician burnout and about how to have compassion for oneself and others, and actually how to deal with physician burnout by having that compassion, by being able first to feel your own feelings. Because it's so easy for doctors to be able to not feel the feelings of their patients or themselves, because it could be so overwhelming. So then you create these boundaries and have this so-called professional distance. But the more that you're pushing against that, the more that you don't let those things in, the more they actually start to get you in an unconscious level. It's by letting yourself feel your feelings, both your pain and the pain of your patients, and being able to process that and then let that kind of go through you. Then you metabolize it, then you work it through, and then it doesn't get stuck. And only then are you able to help patients and really be with them and be more in touch with your own vulnerability in the process. So his website is Dr. Frank Gabrin, G-A-B-R-I-N. And in honor of him, myself and a few colleagues are actually starting a way of providing first responders and frontline workers with immediate support and relief in times of this crisis and then beyond. So we're starting an organization and a foundation to do that.
Wow, that is just, what an amazing person. And Anna, do you meditate with your patients or do you breathe with your patients?
Yes, I do teach them breathing exercises a lot. And what I will often do with my patients, if they would like me to, or if they're open to it, is we pray together. We pray for what they need and want. And so my book is a book that has a spiritual bend to it. It's called Fulfilled, How the Science of Spirituality Can Help You Live a Happier, More Meaningful Life. And so it's part of how I, as a psychiatrist, bring in the spiritual dimension into my practice and in my work with patients to the degree that patients want. And right now, so many people are scared, lonely, afraid, anxious. So we bring that in and we pray together. We pray for what they want. We state it very clearly. We ask for the higher power, which, by the way, doesn't have to be God. And you certainly don't need to be religious in any way in order to be spiritual. The higher power could also be the universe, source, our collective consciousness, or even a set of transcendent values such as hope, trust, and perseverance that lift you up and enable you to feel a connection to something greater than oneself. So absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's so powerful that, and you talk about spirituality, and I think a lot of people typically think of spirituality as religion, but I think you're making a very important point, which is spirituality is really interconnectedness and thinking of something that may have a higher level of interconnectedness beyond yourself, even if it's secular.
Exactly. Right. And being connected to something greater. I think throughout all this, you know, we talked about the importance of centeredness, of meaning making. Having that connection really, really helps with that. It's, you know, often having that something greater makes even the difficult experiences meaningful.
And Anna, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know if patients ask you this, but Do you get anyone that comes in during these sorts of situations and asks you, why is this happening? And
what's the reason
that this is happening? And how do you approach that?
Yes, just yesterday, a patient of mine said to me, I'm such a good person. I've devoted my life to helping others. Why is God doing this to me? And this is a patient who was affected by more than, you know, most people by this whole crazy situation. Yes, people wonder that. They're like, are they somehow cursed? Are they somehow unlucky? Did they do something to deserve this? Why has God betrayed them? Why has the universe abandoned them? Yes, people feel that. And those are the most difficult questions because that's where the meaning making comes in, you know? And the way that I see it, the universe, God, the something greater is a benevolent force. It's not a force that's looking to punish. It's not a force that's looking to betray. But difficult things can happen because that's the nature of life. And it's through these difficulties that we learn our lessons in this world and that ultimately we're able to elevate our souls and transcend and become better people and become more trusting and have more faith actually in this process. Because when things like this happen, either you get more faith or it takes your faith away. So people can go in either direction.
And, you know, I think for people to be able to just even more relate to what you're saying, and I know all of us have gone through difficult times. Is there a time that you would say that was a challenge for you where you didn't realize it, but then as you got through it, you realized, wow, I really did learn something positive out of this?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Like my whole life, you know, and I write a ton about this in my book, you know, yeah. My whole soulmate process of meeting my soulmate, that was very challenging. It took me a long time to meet the person I ended up marrying. And, you know, I'm really, really happily married. And thank God my husband is healthy now. But it took a really long time. And I often wondered, is this ever going to happen? Am I going to be single my whole life? And, you know, and what do I need to change about myself? Like, why is this happening to me? All those questions. But then you realize as it happens that you're growing every step of the way. And for me, I feel that in a way, I was given those challenges because now I can help so many other people. A huge part of my practice is men and women looking for their soulmates. Having been through the process and now being on the other side, I can help them. And in the same way, I also feel, you know, we like, why do things happen as they do? I feel that my husband and I both got COVID right at the beginning so that we can both get through it and then help all the people, all of our friends, family, community, my patients, et cetera, who are now going through it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this reminds me about a lot of the folks that may not be able to be right next to family. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are as residents or maybe they're single and their family may be in a different state and they're not able to travel so easily. And I think that feelings of isolation when you don't have another person next to you can be even more magnified. And is there anything special that you tell them to do to really feel interconnected? Because we keep using the word social distancing, and I'm hoping what we really meant is physical distancing.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely right. Because you have to keep connected to people and keeping connected to people by the phone and adding that component of the video, you know, doing it with Zoom, doing it with FaceTime, just being able to see other people's faces. I have participated already in 4 birthday parties on Zoom.
Like, that's great. Yeah, well, you know, we did a happy hour on Zoom and my wife's been doing girls' night on Zoom.
There you go. Exactly, right? Exactly. We did our Passover Seder, my husband and I together here at home, connected to a much, much broader community. We did it. It was led by, you know, the head of our congregation, but it was like thousands of people connecting.
Wow.
this is our new reality. And the thing is, we don't know how long this is really going to last and whether this is a disease that ends and then we get back to our normal lives or if it's cyclical and actually we're going to be home for much longer than we think.
Well, Anna, this has been really amazing talking to you. If people want to find you, is there a website that people can find you at and where do you practice?
Sure. I practice right now at home on telehealth. The only place that we're allowed to practice right now, but usually I'm based in New York City. So I am licensed in New York City. And yes, I'm continuing to obviously see lots of patients. My website is www.annayusim.com, ANNAYUSIM.com.
And you have much more of a holistic approach. Is this something you learned in residency or how did you find your path and how you wanted to be a psychiatrist?
Yeah, like for me, it really came from, you know, I went to Stanford University, Yale Medical School, and then did my undergraduate in NYU medical schooling here in New York City. And then after that, with all those tools under my belt, feeling that something was still missing, I went to search. And in searching, I explored ashrams in India and Buddhist meditation in Thailand and Kabbalah in Israel, worked with shaman in South Africa and South America. So that all gave me a much more holistic perspective of what healing can entail. And I've integrated into my work thereafter.
And what do you think was missing? Were you able to pinpoint that? And just as a personal anecdote, I'll say, you know, when I went through medical school, I also felt that something was missing and ended up training with some Ayurvedic approaches as well and became an Ayurvedic practitioner. So I'm really curious to hear what you felt was missing, or did you realize later on what it was that was missing?
Yeah, no. And I think that makes so much sense what you're saying, and that you went into Ayurveda. That's so beautiful. I'd love to talk to you more about that. And I think probably we felt similarly. For me, I felt that what medicine missed out on oftentimes was the soul. Very rarely in medical school or in my residency was the word soul used in practice. And what I felt disconnected from as I was, you know, becoming a doctor and seeing patients was my own soul. And it was through going to these different cultures and learning these other ways of healing that I was able to reconnect to my soul and feel whole and feel like I'm living more authentically, essentially.
You know what's funny, Anna, and I don't know if you have had the same experience. When I turned to Ayurveda, I thought, well, you know, maybe this will help me understand myself better as the first step for why I wanted to do it. And after I learned it, I realized, wow, you could really incorporate this into how you practice and how you connect with other people. And, you know, you can teach them about diet, lifestyle practices, even medications. I can put it in the context of Ayurveda. But I remember going to Ayurveda to better myself in a way. It was like self-discovery. But I will say, when I went to medical school, I don't hear that narrative much that I'm going to medical school to discover myself. It's usually, oh, this is an opportunity to help people, of course, but it wasn't set in the landscape of I'm going to be able to introspect on who I am.
Exactly, exactly. In medical school, in some ways, every experience you have is going to force you to introspect and look within. But medical school
is true.
Specifically set up certainly to do that. And quite the contrary, you have to learn so much and study so much. So you engage your mind, but oftentimes to the detriment of your own soul. Because of the pressure to succeed and learn and to pass all the exams, you can actually be alienated for years from your soul until you start to feel like something's missing and then go out to find what that is.
Well, Anna, this has been so enlightening, and I really appreciate your time and taking us through some of the ways that you connect with your patients and the way you practice. Obviously, it's very unique. If you were here in California with me, I would be referring all kinds of people to you, drop of a hat. But maybe just out of respect for all those frontline providers and for the respect of, you know, your friend, Dr. Gabrin, that passed away, maybe we can end with a moment of silence and just allow a lot of us to breathe, take in the moment, and just say thanks to all those folks that are really trying their best to keep us healthy and whole during this period of time.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you so much, Raja.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Jivon, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at jivon.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.